On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are trying desperately to get home for Christmas with Hawkeye on Disney Plus, going feral in the wilderness with a girls' football team in yellow jackets on Sky Atlantic, discovering that murder is child's play in doll-oriented horror spin-off series Chucky on Sky Max, and hearing a testimonial from a man accused of murder in You Don't Know Me on BBC One. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, coming to you this week exclusively on Pluto TV, the leading free television streaming service, apparently, albeit one that neither you, nor I, nor anyone in the 32nd century has ever actually heard of. But let's get into that in just a minute, because I'm joined, as is my wont, by my two Pilot TV co-hosts. First, a man who watches more TV than any human being alive and for whom no corner of the televisual realm remains hidden. And yet, when I told him a few days ago where Star Trek Discovery would be airing in the UK, he responded with, and I quote, "What the fuck is that?" It's Boyd Hilton. Hello, Boyd.
Hello, James. Yeah, I mean, they managed to find the most obscure, little-known outlet for fucking Star Trek disco that's ever been known to humanity.
And Pluto's not even a proper planet. What on earth?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
also with us this week is a woman who had an even bigger shock this week when she was unexpectedly appointed to the Vatican as an honorary cardinal and apostolic nuncio to the Holy Seat for anime, manga, and Wimpole-related hentai. It's Beth Webb.
You need to stop it. Stop this.
I'm never going to stop. Just don't expect it. It's going on forever. But more important than any of that, Beth, is of course the fact that we are now a transatlantic show, as you, Beth, are beaming in, like Starfleet Command, all the way from New York City, where you are, or rather were, enjoying a holiday. Isn't that right?
Hey, forget about it.
Wow. Wow. And my Brummy accent was cause for concern, was it?
Yes, I am.
I hope you haven't said that in public, Beth, to anyone.
I've made nothing but friends since I've come here.
I don't know. They've all seen this country over there. You'll fit right in. It's fine.
They have. They've got an American version coming out, don't they? Which is slightly upsetting.
Yeah, that's sure to be brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
But I'm jealous. New York and Christmas, that's lovely.
It is beautiful. It was very nice. I watched some of Hawkeye while I was over here, so it was nice to do that juxtaposed against the Manhattan skyline, which I'm currently looking out at desperately. I can't because I'm here recording with you two.
I'm so jealous. And you went to the Thanksgiving Day parade.
Yes, I did. I saw Baby Grogu, all 80 feet of him, or however fucking big he was.
Fantastic.
That was absolutely
Please
terrifying.
Please bring that back.
That's how I'm getting home, is riding the back of him, like a tray in a Neverending Story.
It did look amazing, I have to say. I'm so jealous. I've been to New York pretty much every year of my adult life since I was about 20, except for the last 2 years since the fucking global epidemic and everything. And I really need to go, so I'm furious that you're there and I'm not. Yeah.
It was beautiful. Oh my anyway. God, I need it. So one of the floats was a peacock float for the channel, and it had, I forget what the Busy Phillips show is. It's like a Girls in the Band, I think it is. And it was just Busy Phillips on the back of this float, just shouting at people. It was really funny.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Great. Actual Busy Phillips.
What more could you want?
Actual Busy Phillips.
Not an inflatable Busy Phillips. Right, okay.
Literal Busy Phillips.
Amazing. Well, we should get into this Star Trek debacle to follow on from last week's Star Trek debacle. So, due to the outcry, which I like to think that our podcast started, over Star Trek Discovery not appearing on Netflix or indeed anywhere outside the US when it landed there last week, they did a massive reverse ferret, Boyd. Paramount Plus issued a statement to all of the international Star Trek Discovery fans, and it read, "We hear you. We love this series too. We love it for the incredible cast, the hardworking crew, the blah, 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 blah. Therefore, during this transition, we are doing everything we can to get this new season to you as soon as possible. For information on where to find Star Trek Discovery, go to StarTrek.com. Now, I went to StarTrek.com because I go that extra mile for this podcast, and they had additional information stating where it would air in the various territories. But crucially, when we got to the UK part of this, it said, Pluto TV, the leading free streaming television service, will drop new episodes at 9 p.m. local time on the Pluto TV sci-fi channel. each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, with a simulcast running on the Star Trek channel in Austria, Switzerland, and Germany. So the first two episodes, of course, debuting on Friday, which was last Friday, November the 26th. Now, not only then is there a thing called Pluto TV, which I was unaware of, Pluto TV also has a sci-fi channel, which I was equally unaware of. And I think the most searched term on the internet last Wednesday was, what the fuck is Pluto TV? Because genuinely, what the fuck is Pluto TV? So it is a thing that apparently is owned by Viacom, who also own Paramount, and it is a free ad-supported thing that you can watch. There's an app, you can download it to your phone, there is an app, you can watch it on it's on Roku, you can find it around there, there's like an iOS app, you can watch it on Apple TV, whatever you do, but it's not a lot of it is on demand, most of it is scheduled ad-supported broadcasting. So like Star Trek, it's on at 9 o'clock, and watch it at 9 o'clock or don't watch it. Like, it was very much a kind of like, make sure you're there for thing. The only saving grace of this is that they also made it available for purchase on digital platforms. I think it's on iTunes and Google Play and whatnot, a few other things. So beginning again on the Friday when it dropped on Pluto TV, you could buy it. So if you didn't want to navigate, and frankly, you didn't want to navigate Pluto TV, you could just hop onto iTunes and, for your own sanity, shell out a little bit of money and get it there, which I think maybe I recommend more so. But the upshot of this is, Stardate Discovery is here. It's among us. I've seen it. I feel better. I feel like a more rounded human being now. The first two episodes did go out. And I have to say, I'm feeling a little bit cheated by not being able to make Beth watch the first two episodes of Stardate Discovery. So we've not been able to review it, unfortunately. But I will do so very briefly here and say they were fine. it was very, very sort of, I felt sort of stock Star Trek. Nothing too exciting, nothing to write home about. There was... I mean, in terms of noteworthiness, I will say there was a weightlessness thing, which I wasn't sure was supposed to be played for laughs, but certainly made me chuckle, which was, I think, a first. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but I think that might have been a first in Star Trek comedy weightlessness. But anyway, there was a terrifying future 32nd century Ferengi. I think he was a Ferengi who scared the shit out of me. And the head of the Federation looks like, I'm guessing, a Bajoran Cardassian mixed race character. So, okay, Star Trek Discovery, season two, so far, it's heavy on the spatial anomalies and not enough on what I like to think is like the political threat. Because I still think Star Trek Discovery season one was the strongest with all the Klingon stuff, and that worked really, really well. And then the sort of Lorca stuff and the Mirror Universe stuff was very good because it was sort of political alien peril. And I think since they moved to the 32nd century, it's been a little too spatial anomaly oriented, what with the burn and now this other thing that I won't spoil for people who haven't seen it. And that is my... not review of Star Trek Discovery.
Brilliant.
Beth, are you sad that you've missed it?
Yeah, I understood. Well, I understood about five of those words.
Spatial anomaly. So, you understood that.
Political spatial anomaly, whatever the fuck it was.
And scary Ferengis. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Gutted. Gutted. I've logged on multiple day to listen to that. Thank you.
I will, of course, keep you posted as the season progresses. But so far, not a banner couple of episodes, but I enjoyed them. And that's the important thing. Yes. What have you guys been watching this week?
Well, on the plane over, I caught up on some watching. I didn't watch Star Trek Discovery, in spite of me wanting to watch all of it and then tell you all about it.
You weren't glued to Pluto TV then?
No, I was not. No, I caught up on some shows I hadn't been watching, but I meant to be watching. I watched Wellington Paranormal, the spin-off of the spin-off of What We Do in the Shadows. And that was really, really good fun. I really enjoyed that. It was scary. It wasn't scary, but I really like with both of those spin-offs that they get the horror element of the horror comedy really spot on. There's some really fun kind of body horror in it, and some good sharp shocks, actually. I really enjoyed that. And I'm just a sucker for that kind of dry, deadpan, like New Zealand delivery. It always gets me. So that was that was really fun. And then I also took a look at the show Dave, that kind of thing that's sort of set against
Little Dicky,
which was fine. It was okay.
Boyd's a fan, aren't you, Boyd? Boyd loves it.
Yeah.
Do you?
I really do, yeah.
Is it worth tickets? I watched the first two and I was like, well, this isn't Atlanta, and I stopped. But you think it's worth a bit of time?
First two of season two or season one?
season one, I think, there was a pretty explicit sexual episode about a certain fetish that happened. And little Dicky having his way with a sort of half body sex doll. That was something that was a little bit embarrassing to watch on a flight, but I kept with it.
Yeah.
So you say stick with it.
I do. Yeah. Those sounds like season one. I think it gets better and better. And there are some absolutely outstanding episodes. Yeah. It's not, it's not quite up there with Atlanta. You're right. Yeah. It's definitely not Atlanta, but it is in its own way. As bold and daring, and I mean, you've seen some of the daring aspects of it from the sexual, the sexual stuff. But it gets, there's some really good stuff, really, really good stuff in it. Yeah, there's a brilliant episode in series season two with his parents, where just he kind of almost moves back in with them, and what happens? It's fantastic. Yeah, so I really like Dave. Yeah, I think it's really good.
The parents are great. The parents are like George Costanza's parents, and I'm very good for that.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. Well, I'll tell you what I've been watching, James. And
go on,
Beth,
buddy.
Somehow, in between watching all the stuff we have to watch for the show, for this podcast, obviously keeping up to date with Doctor Who, which, by the way, is absolutely loving the series. I think the Village of the Angels episode, which was co-written with Maxine Alderson with Chris Chibnall, which went out last week, was fantastic. The Weeping Angels, brilliant deployment of the Weeping Angels. And the one that went out just yesterday, as you're listening to this on Monday, is also awesome. That's the penultimate episode. So I think they've done a really good job. So there's that. I've been keeping up with all the other stuff. But I managed to carve out 7 hours and 48 minutes to watch Get Back, the Beatles, on Disney Plus. Yeah. On Disney Plus.
Amazing.
It is. There's various things to be said. I mean, I could bang on about it for about 7 hours and 48 minutes myself. But if you're a Beatles fan, Beth?
Yeah, I am. I'm saving this for Christmas, for a big Christmas watch.
Oh, good. Very good. Yeah. I mean, James doesn't really understand popular music, so we won't see if he likes the Beatles.
All of that is fair.
I assume he doesn't. Yeah. Anyway. It's like a hangout. It's the ultimate hangout movie in that basically you're hanging out with John, Paul, George and Ringo and their gang and their producers and engineers, etc., for nearly 8 hours. It's such a hangout situation that the first part is in three separate episodes, separate parts, this series. And the first one, which goes on for a few hours, you're literally just watching them rehearsing, trying to write songs together. You know, kind of messing around for hours on end, and there's almost barely any narrative or anything apart from that they have to come up with, in theory, 14 songs for a new album and TV special. And it just nothing much happens, and then suddenly there's a huge big happening towards the end of the first episode involving George Harrison, and you're like, oh, so maybe deliberately, you know, put Peter Jackson, who pulled it all together and directed it, in quotes, has deliberately kept it going on and on where nothing happening, and then suddenly this George Harrison bombshell arrives, which Beatles fans will know about anyway, and it becomes even more dramatic than it would have been if he'd have cut it down, as any normal director would have done, to like about an hour or whatever. Right, this could have been like a 2-hour film. I think the original plan was it was a film, right? And then Peter Jackson, in Peter Jackson style, in the same way that The Hobbit, I think, became one film and then three epic 3-hour films from one like 80-page novel, because Peter Jackson cannot edit things down. But in this sense, I guess in the same way that Lord of the Rings and Hobbit fans don't give a flying shit that he's given us two trilogies, and you know, and he can't edit and he doesn't care and he just gives us as much material as possible, I guess fans of Tolkien don't care because they love that stuff. Similarly, fans of the Beatles like me, I don't give a shit that he hasn't managed to hone this into any kind of coherent thing and it's just an 8-hour splurge, because I love the Beatles and it's incredible to be able to hang out with them for 8 hours. Yeah. So it's like everything good and bad about Peter Jackson is kind of summed up by this thing. And everything great about the Beatles is definitely in there because they are phenomenal. And it is just an extraordinary thing to watch and experience. But if you're not a Beatles fan, I warn you now, it's basically you're watching them rehearsing the same song 157 times, basically. with some incidents happening every now and then, as they eventually go to the roof and famously perform on the roof, their last ever public performance in 1969 in their office on Savile Row. So, but generally, it's an incredible thing to see. Thank you very much, Disney Plus, Peter Jackson, etc.
I have not watched that. You'll be unsurprised to hear. I have, however, watched some surprising things. Now, one of those things was going to be a thing that I couldn't talk about again, and it was that I've watched the rest of season two of The Witcher. But, and the only reason I'm going to mention that now, even though obviously I can't talk about it, is because I interviewed Henry Cavill yesterday for this very podcast about season two of The Witcher.
Yeah, we all know. Picture of you, your bald head with Henry Cavill.
And I hadn't planned to mention that because it's not going to be on this podcast for a few weeks until Henry Cavill puts my bald head on his Instagram. And I was suddenly inundated with messages from people saying, is this you? Is this you? Who surprisingly identified me only from the silhouette of my bald head, which I don't think even my mum could do. So that's actually quite impressive stuff. But yes, I did in fact get to speak to Henry Cavill in what I think it's safe to say might be the single geekiest interview ever conducted by anyone about anything. Genuinely, it's quite something. So you can look forward to that in a couple of episodes' time. But more importantly than that, I met Kal-El, his enormous, great bear of a dog, who he brought with him to the interview, and that I may have spent a lot of the time either talking about or talking to. But that was a lot of fun. Very, very, very excited to meet Cal the giant dog. Anyway, that is not
really
the surprising thing.
I was really tempted when I saw that photo of your bald head and the very handsome Henry Cavill and his dog on the official Henry Cavill Instagram feed. I was really tempted to go, actually, in fact, it's me. It's not James at all. It's the back of my bald head.
Well,
and
funny.
Who would have known? Who would have?
Someone actually said that. Literally, someone said that. Is that your head or Boyd's? I can't tell.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I know.
That's fair.
Yeah, and I've had people asking me, was it you? I'm like, I'm really tempted to go, yes, it was me. James is gutted, but actually, I am the one. I mean, you know, eventually when the interview comes around on the podcast, people would have realised, but you know.
Yes.
Would have got
you were the one talking fancy novels and Warhammer 40,000 with Henry Cavill.
Oh my God.
That's not the most surprising thing. That is not the most surprising thing that happened this week. The most surprising thing that happened this week is I bowed to listener pressure. So I was called out on Twitter a number of times, as was Beth, over the arrival of Arcane on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Arcane being an animated series, which, as Netflix is wont to do, they just dropped out of the ether, unheralded and unadvertised. And this is produced by Riot Games, who make a very popular MOBA game called League of Legends, which has been around for ages. It's big in the esports scene. I have played it briefly many years ago and was never very good at it. But nevertheless, so it's based on that. So it's based on a video game, and everyone was saying, you've got to watch it. It's amazing. It's amazing. And I was like, really? Is it though? I mean, come on. however, some people posted some GIFs, and I was like, oh, it actually looks unlike Invincible. It looks unlike a Saturday morning cartoon. It actually looks like it looks quite nice. So I put on the first episode, planning to watch like a few minutes to see what it was like. And fuck me if it isn't really good. So it's... Genuinely, Boyd, I'm here to tell you, this is an animation I'm considering watching all the way through, and I recommend you watch it too. And let me tell you why. So it starts with an incredibly bleak prologue in like an aftermath of a war, people like dying, children walking around, dead parents. Like, it's pretty hardcore. Like, it's definitely not aimed at kids at all. But more than that, the animation is absolutely on another level entirely. Like, it is stunning. It's a mix of CGI and hand-drawn animation, but it's by Fortiche, which is a French animation studio based in Paris. And it's just one of the most stunning things I've ever seen. Like, I can't, I mean, it weirdly, from a visual style, just in terms of technique, Mitchell's versus the Machines has that sort of similar sort of like, where you're like, oh, is it hand-drawn? Is it not? Is it digital? Which it is. But like, it has that sort of same, like, it evoked that same feel. Because I felt Mitchell's versus the Machine had that really beautiful visual style to it. But this takes that and less cartoonifies it. Keeps it slightly within the aesthetic, I think, of the game. But more than that, it just looks absolutely stunning. And it's not just that it looks stunning, like it's beautifully art directed, it's incredibly well directed. The shots are stunningly composed, as you would like the most accomplished live action action. It's got beautiful sort of slow motion sequences, lovely sort of musical quiet interludes, like a piano bit that plays in there. I don't love the theme tune to the show, I gotta be honest, but other than that, I thought the music in it was incredible. The voice actor, you got Hayley Steinfeld is in it, playing sort of like, it's basically about two sisters who I think are characters in the game who don't get on, and this is all about why they don't get on. You got Hayley Steinfeld as Vi and Ella Purnell as Powder, who then becomes Jinx. You know, Harry Lloyd is in this. Shuri Agdashloo, the godlike Shuri Agdashloo from The Expanse, is in this as well.
Bloody hell.
No, she's amazing. She's amazing. She's been in lots of things other than The Expanse, but she's best in The Expanse. But genuinely, this is properly great stuff, so much so that were I reviewing that this week, there's a very strong chance it would be my show of the week. I think it's genuinely fabulous. I really do. Like, so if you, like Boyd and myself, are animation naysayers, I would say this may well be the show that will turn your head, not least of all because it looks better than most live action films and blockbusters, but also it's just so beautifully put together. It is like, I'd love to see the storyboards for this because it's been so painstakingly staged. And also, even though it's an animation, you know, this is always a bugbear for me, even though it's an animation, the acting is not, I mean, it is at times, it's a little bit like animation acting, a little bit heightened at times, but it's actually quite grounded. Like, it feels believable. It didn't alienate me. Like, I didn't get pushed out of the story by the silliness. Invincible. So look, Arcane, streaming on Netflix now. Watch it, people. It's great.
Oh my God.
I'm giving up
my Vatican chair. Placing the crown on your head.
But it's like, my work here is done.
Absolutely reeling from this revelation. Do you have to know something about the game that it's based on or
not at all? I think it's one of these where I think they've actually done a very smart thing. So instead of trying to replicate the plot of a game that doesn't really have a plot, they've instead looking at, it's like the origin story of a few characters, focusing on these two, these sisters and their relationship. So they've kind of created a whole new, I'm assuming it's entirely new, like a whole new narrative around this. And I think that's a really smart thing to do. So actually I would say that its relation to the game is, you know, minimal. So you don't really need to know anything about it. Right. As I don't, because I don't remember either of these characters from my brief time playing the game. I remember Warwick the werewolf, who was, I believe, a jungler. There is no reason why you would know what that means, and I barely understand what that means, but he is a jungler, as opposed to, you know, like an AP carry. Or anyway, let's not get into that. So, fine. Yes, Arcane, brilliant. Loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it. It was great.
Well, shit.
Here endeth the section.
Since it's just you that likes it so much, I would normally ignore that. But since everyone else is saying it's good as well, I might have to try it out.
Yeah, no, it has been. A lot of people like came to me specifically saying, you know, I know you don't like animation, but seriously, this is it. And they were right. Well, that is what we've been watching now. Normally we'd move straight on to a listener question. We had a really topical one. It wasn't a listener question so much as it was a Boyd question, but we were going to talk about great shows that were set in New York because Hawkeye's set in New York. Beth is actually in New York. But we had some, shall we say, technical difficulties because we are once again doing this virtually on account of Ben, on account of Beth being out of the country. So I'm saying we're going to have to skip the list of questions just for the pure fact that Beth has absolutely seriously tickets for a museum that she has to go to, and we are keeping her from this. So we're going to press on now. So let's press on now to this week's news. Obviously, it's been Thanksgiving last week, so we don't necessarily have the world's most amount of news, but there still seems to be a few bits and bobs going along. Anyone like to kick this off?
We had a surprise trailer for Euphoria Season 2 and an air date. So it's coming out on the 9th of January, and we got a full-length trailer. I didn't even realise it had wrapped. Boyd, I don't know if you were aware of this, but I thought they were still filming, so this was a real surprise to me.
Yeah.
Were you euphoric?
I mean, it looks pretty fucking bleak, to be honest.
Partridge.
yeah, Partridge. It looks like everything has been cranked up a notch. So stylistically, it looks ridiculously slick and beautiful kind of set pieces. very, 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 yeah, very stylish. But it looks like thematically it's going to get, if even possible, a lot darker. It looks like Zendaya's character, Rue, who is kind of our narrator through this, it looks like she falls into some pretty murky water with some dodgy dealers. Everyone looks a little bit miserable. Beautiful and miserable, I think, is how I would summarize the show. Everyone's beautiful, but so sad. So, yeah, it looks like just everything's been cranked up a notch. But I am really looking forward to seeing it. It's such an exciting show. So, yeah. January 9th for that. I don't know where we'll get that here. I guess
next day. Yeah, Sky. Yeah, yeah. Sky Atlantic confirmed it'll be on January 10th here. Yeah, yeah.
Good stuff.
I thought it looked. I thought the trailer was really good. Yeah, because it kind of actually because you got the first bit when Zendaya is kind of singing along and dancing to Frank Sinatra, which is quite fun. And then you're right. Then all the kind of bits and pieces you see, the glimpses of the next season where people are being violent and horrible and on drugs and generally looks quite nightmarish. But I think it's easy to forget just how kind of amazing the first season was. I thought it was in terms of visually, stylistically, one of the episodes was like a horror film kind of thing. I thought it was pretty brilliant anyway. So I'm excited. Yeah, it does look, as you say, it does look like they've wrapped it up even more this time round. That is a very exciting arrival early for early 2022, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I've been a bit out of the loop. I've heard something about Peppa Pig. Is that right? Wasn't it like a like a $1.5 billion acquisition or something? Which is fucking wild. Unless someone's just lied to me about that, in which case, like, fair play to it, I believed it.
Is this off the back of the Prime Minister's speech?
Yeah, this was a Boris Johnson thing, yeah.
Gosh.
Prime Minister... For reasons unknown, started banging on about Peppa Pig World. And honestly, the less said about that, the better.
Yeah. To be fair, yeah. Yeah. The Christmas kind of not schedules, but the first version of Christmas TV has been announced. So we know the big dramas that are coming up Christmas. BBC One, Around the World in 80 Days with David Tennant as Phileas Fogg. Yeah. There's going to be a Doctor Who New Year's Day special,
right?
Which is which will not be part of Flux, the current six-parter.
A very Luther Christmas?
No, there is no very Luther Christmas. You
damn it,
crazy son of a bitch! there is, however, a very British scandal, which is Sarah Phelps's new three-part drama, which is going to air between Christmas and New Year. Around Boxing Day, and I may or may not have gone to a screening of that, and I may or may not have chatted to Sarah Phelps, and I may or may not have seen how brilliant it is, even though I think it's probably embargoed. Claire Foy as Margaret Campbell, who this extraordinary socialite who married the Duke of Argyle, and it's going to be pretty amazing. Yeah, that's going to be pretty amazing.
I mean, you tweeted this boy to your like million
did I?
followers.
Yes,
that you thought was really good.
I did. But I very carefully said it was a treat to go to the screening of Sarah Phelps's new show. I didn't say whether I thought it was good or not at all. What I did remark upon it was at the venue for this screening was so posh that when we went to the screening room and sat in our seats, a wine waiter came round to us individually and filled up our wine glasses before the screening started. I thought that was spectacular. I have to say,
ridiculous.
Very excited. Mark Gatiss has got two special one-offs. One on BBC Two, The Mezzo Tint, and one, The Amazing Mr. Blunden on Sky Max. Very exciting.
Brilliant.
And loads of other stuff as well. But yeah, we won't go into it now.
Good, good. What else has happened? So, live action Blade Runner and Alien series may be coming our way. Did you see this? So,
yeah,
Ridley Scott was talking to.
Yeah.
You're annoyed.
Yeah.
What, because they're sullying the franchises because they didn't tell you?
Oh, Alien is franchises. Long gone, I'm sorry.
I mean...
Let's be honest.
Alien... Yeah. I think Alien was pre-announced already, wasn't it? I think, I'm pretty sure. The TV...
Well, it's gone backwards and forwards, hasn't it? There have been a few different possible things. But I think we did know that was coming. But he was... I think Ridley Scott was talking to, I want to say, Radio 4, and he was saying that the pilot for a live-action Blade Runner is already written. So that's very exciting. A 10-hour TV show, I think, is in the works for that. I don't know. It depends. Like if they can bring a TV show to life with the kind of visual flair that Denis Villeneuve brought to 2049, then I couldn't be happier. I think it's a very rich world, and I love the feel of it. So, yeah, I'm actually quite excited about that. Much more so than I am about the Alien one, which will... Yeah. No, but...
I mean, as long as they just let Harrison Ford rest... They just leave him alone now. Like, he looks
rest
so
or rust.
Tired. he just looks so tired. Yeah, so no, I think Harrison. As long as they leave him to sleep,
yeah,
that's fine.
It'll be Deckard's like nephew or something. There'll be some tedious.
That's
you know.
Fine, but you just need to be in that world. You don't need the characters. You just need to be in the world and have a bit
I'm
of familiarity.
Sure.
I think you
I
know.
Don't know if we need to return to that world in an over long TV. Thing produced by Ridley Scott, who by the way, Ridley Scott's quality filter has to be finally retuned because he needs to spend more time on his films and not knock out two a year. You know, have you seen every Ridley Scott film ever made? I mean, the hit rate is slowing down, isn't it? Let's face it. Let's be real. Fucking
I'm assuming you weren't a fan of House of Gookie.
House of Gookie. I mean, I kind of loved it in spite of Ridley Scott. Like, I liked, you know, I loved Al Pacino and I loved all the people in it and Lady Gaga. And it was, but it wasn't quite as much fun as it needed to be, as it should have been, because it was directed by Ridley Scott. And the one before that, The Last Duel, the near 3-hour thing with men telling us their versions of what happened when this woman was raped, didn't work for me either. So, yeah, anyway. And Ridley Scott blaming, by the way, I think from a similar interview round, Ridley Scott blaming millennials and their mobile phones for why The Last Duel did not work in the box office was absolutely hilarious. He is
what was his thing? What was his issue with mobile phones? I didn't see this.
He said, he was on Mark Maron's podcast. So Mark Maron said, why do you think the film flopped, you know, in put it in slightly nicer terms. He said, you know, he was like, do you blame Disney's marketing or lack thereof? Because they didn't really market it particularly. And Ridley Scott was like, no, they did a great job marketing it. No, they didn't. I mean, they literally practically ignored it. There was like, there were no screenings, were there, for like advanced screenings at all, apart from like the day before. Anyway. So he's got, no, it's not their fault. It's the fault of fucking millennials on their mobile phones who don't want to learn anything about history. It was
that's
like,
amazing.
No, don't think so, Ridley. Oh, I don't think you're right. Anyway, that's my slight feeling about Ridley Scott. And what was the TV thing? Brave New World? I mean, that was... Oh, Raised by Wolves. Sorry, Raised by Wolves. Thank you. Yeah. Yes.
Raised by Wolves, yes. The 10 hours that he still owes me back for having sat through that.
Exactly. He's doing too much. Do less.
Yeah.
That's my advice. I'm sure we'll be listening and we'll
I'm sure he is.
Yeah.
But none of that matters, Boyd, because we heard more rumblings this week that Amazon is nearing a deal to bring us a TV series based on hit video game Mass Effect. The Mass Effect series may in fact be coming to screen. And you know how we've been but earlier this year, when Henry Cavill, my close personal friend Henry Cavill, was making season 2 of The Witcher, he tweeted a picture of him in the makeup chair having his very wiggy wig for Geralt of Rivia put on his head, and he had some papers printed out. He was holding in the foreground, so they were out of focus. They were very much, you couldn't read a word of it. And he was like, secret project, who knows? And it was like, hashtag secrets. And then, of course, the internet being the internet, were like, dude, Photoshop exists. We can unblur this quite easily. So they took it into Photoshop. They unblurred the text. And what it actually was, it was a printout of the Wikipedia page for Mass Effect. So the thought is that Henry Cavill may star in this. He may produce this. Mm. Now, if I were an in any way competent journalist, I would have asked him about that instead of banging on about Warhammer 40,000 for 15 minutes and then another 20 minutes or something talking about fantasy novels. But hey, I am none of those things, so I didn't, and I have no idea whether he is or not. But, you know, what do you want from me?
God, brilliant.
Because I don't know anything about computer games like that, I have no, I can't get...
It's very good. It's very iconic video game by BioWare, published by EA, and it sort of takes place in the future. It's a bit spacey. It's a bit Star Trek-y, a bit expansy. You'd love it. Lots of stuff going on. It's good. It's good. It's a good narratively driven game, so it could be quite fun. What else has come out in terms of news? Well, Arcane has been renewed for season 2, so that's exciting for me.
Oh, yeah. Can I tell you something funny about that? I got that email, even though I didn't get any email. I don't remember getting any email telling me Arcane was on Netflix, by the way.
No, neither did I.
We didn't deliberately snub it in this show. I think people assume that we snub every animation deliberately. But I don't remember being told.
We didn't know about it.
No, we didn't know about it. Yeah, we didn't. But I did get sent this email about the renewal of for season two. And on the email, I could try and find it on my thing. But it literally said, "Dear blah 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 blah. If you want to feature this story in the NME, please let us know." So I was like, "Oh dear, yes, your round robin email, I'm afraid, has failed, and I don't work for the NME." Yeah, so that was quite amusing, but. Yeah, there's season two of that. The most exciting news of the week, though, James, come on. Come on now. You know what
you're
going to
tell me it's that Natasha Lou Bordizzo is going to play Sabine Wren in Star Wars Ahsoka.
No.
Obviously, the character from Star Wars Rebels.
No.
No?
No.
It's not that.
No, no,
right,
no,
fine.
No, no. It's that. The next Russell T. Davis project has been announced. The great man, TV's greatest dramatist, is writing a three-parter for ITV, or has written, I'm not sure exactly which, in which Helena Bonham Carter, no less, will play Noel Gordon, the legendary actress who was in Crossroads, the iconic ITV soap opera that ran for years and years and years way back then, that when I was a kid, I used to watch. And even then, when I was like, you know, 7, 8, 9 or whatever, I was kind of vaguely aware that it was a bit shit because it was like a famously like cardboardy set. Like, you know, the walls used to shake. It was a little bit what Acorn Antiques, you know, Victoria Wood's spoof soap opera. There was a heavy amount of Crossroads in Acorn Antiques and that whole kind of rickety British soap opera set situation. But anyway, Noel Gordon was cruelly axed from it. She was the big matriarch of the show and they sacked her. And Russell T. Davis is telling the story about what happened to her, the decline and fall. It's called Nolly, which was her nickname, N-O-L-L-Y. And just the idea that he's writing it, Helena Bonham Carter starring in it. Nicholas Schindler, his producer since Queer as Folk, is producing it with her new company. So yeah, that is very exciting indeed, isn't it, obviously, James?
It is. It is. Anything RTD is doing, I am here for.
Yes.
But as time is limited and museums await for Beth, shall we get on to this week's reviews? And we begin this week with Disney's Hawkeye, which we couldn't talk about last week. This is the latest MCU series to land on our screens and sees Jeremy Renner's Clint Barton team up with Hailee Steinfeld's Kate Bishop to take down the tracksuit mafia in New York. And of course, who better to tell us about it than our very own NYC correspondent, Bethany Webb?
I mean, you laugh, but I actually had some context of this show because a friend who writes for Empire, Kimberly Campbell, showed me some of the comics of this because he was like, there's a really strong parental theme in it. They drink a lot of coffee. I was like, this is Marvel's Gilmore Girls. We've got a Marvel's Gilmore Girls. So I've actually read some of the comics and really, really enjoyed them. So I was very excited for this and was not let down in the slightest. I really, really enjoyed this. As you said, it's sort of a two-hander, Hailee Steinfeld. Funny, she's in our came with Ella Purnell as well. So that's two for two
that's
in our
right.
podcast. Very exciting. But yeah, Hailee Steinfeld, who I love in everything. I loved her in Edge of 17. Really loved her in Bumblebee.
She's amazing.
And I think, yeah, she's great. So I think she's great at
Dickinson
kind of,
as well. She's very good in Dickinson.
My gosh, of course. Yeah. So wonderful. Great. Jeremy Renner. I was like, okay, we're doing this. And it's to be said, it is addressed very forthrightly and in a very funny way. That yes, he is kind of the lovable dud of the Avengers. There's a really wonderful conversation, very meta conversation between Kate and Clint as to why he's got the spotlight on him for this. But so he's in New York spending Christmas with his kids, very wholesome, very sweet. Meanwhile, Kate is caught up in some criminal shenanigans, and she's a very skilled fighter for reasons that are addressed in this amazing set piece in the opening episode, where she basically saw Hawkeye killing some baddies during the. Now, this is where you lose me, and I'm sorry, but during the big battle with the big flying things, which impacts her in New York, there's a big battle in New York, loads of flying things, and that impacts her world as a little girl. And so she decides to train and protect her mum. And so she's got this kind of hero's love for Hawkeye. Yeah, and she gets caught up in some shenanigans. Clint has to come to her rescue. And then it's this kind of very sweet battle between trying to help her and kind of stop that from happening and just trying to get home to his kids for Christmas. So it's this really weird balance of kind of fun family nonsense and then Marvel action. And I think this does it really, really well. It's really funny. There's a ridiculous sequence with some LARPers, which Jeremy Renner takes place in. I just like to see him have some fun, but also kind of dealing with the fallout of being, yeah, this Avenger that sort of exists on the periphery, but at the same time has obviously experienced a decent amount of loss, and including his hearing. That's another thing. So he has a hearing aid in this, and I think that's quite good to show the actual physical impact of being, you know, a superhero that's had to save the world multiple times. But yeah, it's really funny. The tone is just right. The two central performances are wonderful. The villains are a little bit bombastic, and I hope they keep the silliness just so. But yeah, I was all for this. I thought this was really, really good fun.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think the key to it for me, I was slightly dreading it. I have to say, I don't want to go all Martin Scorsese about Marvel and everything, but I'm starting to get a little bit, you know, weary of particularly the TV stuff. I thought the Falcon and the Winter Soldier was tedious, mostly tedious.
Fair.
And yeah, and you know, so I was beginning to be a bit cynical about it. And like, do you really need? And also Hawkeye. I mean, who cares, really? But sorry, everyone. I never found him a very interesting character at all in the Avengers films. It's like, oh, who cares about him? But having said that, Jeremy Renner is a very talented actor. Hayley Steinfeld is obviously great. And this is just, it's much lighter. It's light on its feet. It's, as you say, it's really, as Beth said, it's fun. You know, that is the main word that comes to mind. Even with the kind of like bits that are quite bombastically look back on, you know, Marvel lore and touch upon all that, it doesn't feel particularly like it's weighing it down. Like, does it feel weighed down by like having loads of revelations about other Marvel characters that we're going to see then reflected in the next four films or whatever? So even though it's obviously part of the MCU, it doesn't feel like, I feel like a lot of Marvel stuff is weighed down by that, which is why I feel a lot of people take against it in that slightly cynical way by people who don't actually watch the stuff, probably. Again, Martin Scorsese, and every film director gets asked about it and goes, oh no, they're all shit, blah, 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 blah. I'm not one of those people, but I feel like the excesses of it are reflected in that. But this is like not excessive. It's light on its feet. The two, they're great together, Renner and Steinfeld. And for me, I guess the moment when it all came, the tone of it was crystallized for me was when they showed them going to the musical, which was really good.
Rogers the Musical.
Rogers the Musical, which was like something
I can do this all day.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing. Clearly, this is, I haven't listened. Have you done the Hawkeye spoiler special yet? No, but clearly
we
that's
have actually. Oh, yes. We have recorded the Hawkeye spoiler special. It is up now. If you want to subscribe to the spoiler special channel, empireonline.com/spoiler specials. Right. Hear me and Chris and Helen and Amon bang on about the first two episodes.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And I'm sure you've probably reenacted the entire sequence of the musical. But
there might have been a bit of that.
Maybe. But that was like something of Curb Your Enthusiasm or something, you know, like Larry David taking part in a fake. In a fake musical. Amazing. That was really funny. And Simon Callow, like to see Simon Callow in the, sometimes with casting of Marvel stuff, you think like, oh yeah, you know, wait till they get around to so-and-so and they'll, but I'm just genuinely like, oh, what the fuck, Simon Callow, this kind of quiet himself, you know, I don't know him, but I always think of him as being a quite absolute lovey, one of the ultimate lovey actors of all time, Simon Callow. Brilliant, obviously brilliantly talented, but to see him having a riot of a time. And frankly, like his performance, it reminded me of like Naked Gun films or something, you know, like really kind of over the top, in a good way, you know, pantomimic villain, but absolutely milking it for all it's worth and being very funny with Vera Farmiga and mysterious and why is he being so horrible to her, etc. So bottom line, finally, one of the reasons, I was inspired to ask the question about New York, TV shows set in New York, because the use of New York is brilliant. I thought it luscious, beautifully filmed and lit use of New York at Christmas time. James is currently showing us his Rogers musical. Yes, I got one of those as well. Thank you. I got a Hawkeye Christmas jumper as well.
So did I. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. But I love the fact that it's set in New York at Christmas, and it is like a Christmas. That is a bit of a masterstroke because generally, I'm here for Christmas set films and TV shows, let alone New York Christmas set TV and film. Yeah. So it was lovely. And the way they did that was spectacular. Fuck knows when they filmed it, how they did it. I really want to know how they did it because it looks like the whole of New York is lit up for Christmas somehow.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. So that was the final thing that persuaded me that I am going to like the show and I am going to love carry on watching the show. So I'm fully here for it, yeah.
It's good. Like, it has a real Shane Blackie vibe to it. That it's Christmas, it's a buddy comedy, there's action in it. And as we talked about in the spoiler special, like, I like the fact that we've gone from like massive stakes to the stakes in this are just, will Hawkeye get home in time for Christmas, like that. Yeah. That is ultimately the threat level of this show.
Yeah,
I think it's actually quite a nice change of pace. Like Falcon the Winter Soldier was very self-important and didn't really work. WandaVision is fantastic because it's like a little puzzle box that you open, and Loki for similar reasons. Like you were fumbling your way through something you didn't quite understand, and it was interesting, but also broadened the mythology of the show. It had quite a lot of weight to it. You felt quite an important show. This feels the opposite of whatever an important show is. Like it's the most inessential show ever, but it knows it, and I think it leans into that. And I think Hayley Steinfeld is one of the most charming actors working, that she has this ability to just make any character incredibly likable. And I think she plays well off his straight man extremely well. I love their dynamic. She's the kind of excitable fangirl, and he's like the stoic, doesn't really want to be famous, a bit rubbish Avenger. Yeah. And it's a lot of fun. The only criticisms I think I kind of had of it were, I maybe felt like as a buddy comedy, the writing could have been a touch sharper. It had some good lines in it, let's not mess about it. It genuinely does have some really good lines in it, but I just felt like some of it, like I wanted the lines to have maybe a little bit more edge and be a bit consistently great. I'd like the zinger rate to be a little higher. We've only seen the first two episodes. It might zing the shit out of the next four. I have no idea. And I really hope it does, because it's fun. And you know, and I think this will, you know, it's introducing the character Echo, who's getting her own show. But generally, you know, you've got the pizza dog, who's quite entertaining in and of himself. Look, I think it's got lots of personality. I think it's funny, and it's very, very, very charming as a show. So obviously, you know, from the first two episodes, it's hard to say how this will sort of shape out, because it is kind of like a little mini series in and of itself. But I am a fan. I like it. That said, it's not even close to being on the same league as WandaVision or Loki. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I agree with you. The dialogue wasn't amazing. Yeah, you're right. But it was like the charm and the chemistry between them was enough for that not to be much of an issue in the end.
I think so. I think they carry it with you know, charm alone. So Hawkeye is airing every Wednesday, new episodes every Wednesday on Disney Plus. The first two will be available as and when you listen to this. Next up, we have Yellow Jackets, or Lady of the Flies, if you will. This is a timeline hopping series that sees a girls football team in the 90s survive a plane crash in the wilderness, where they survive, at least some of them do, for 19 months and turn into a bunch of savages, or so we are led to believe as the story gradually unfolds via flashbacks from the present day. And let me tell you right now, this show does not fuck about, does it, Boyd?
No, it really doesn't. Yeah, this is, I'd almost, this show completely sneaked up on me because I was like vaguely aware of its existence and when it was announced. I remember seeing the announcement of the project and thinking, oh, what's that about? It's about a plane full of teenage female soccer players in a crash. Oh, that's interesting. I remember seeing that Karen Kusama's involved. She directed the first episode. I love her stuff. I think she's absolutely brilliant. Director, and so that was my main interest in it. And now it's come along kind of sooner than I expected. I don't know why. It suddenly arrived on Sky Atlantic, and it's really fucking out there. It's really it's basically, the structure of it is, we introduce to, it cuts between the characters as teenage girls and getting ready, you know, their interactions being part of this soccer team, football team in high school, and their kind of, you know, boyfriends and associates and friends, etc., and their parents. And then it cuts between them as adults, having years, you know, decades later, when the secret of what went on after this plane crash, and where they clearly it turned into a kind of Lady of the Flies, or whatever you want to, as you referred to it, in this kind of where they were stranded, hungry, implications of possible, and this isn't a spoiler, this is all kind of like implications of,
I mean, the first scene is like, yeah, you know,
like bloody violent disgustingness and weird, like turning into weird like sects, you know, on the, and intimations possibly of some supernatural element as well, maybe, but we're not sure. And it's got a very Stephen King vibe to it. It feels like an epic Stephen King novel, because Stephen King does all these things. You know, he cuts between kids and adults. It's style, you know. But there is no, there's no novel. It's not based on anything. It's an original story created by the way,
Ashley Lyle and Bart Nickerson.
Yeah. So it's really quite odd. It's quite an oddity, because almost everything, it feels like it's adapted from a big novel, but it isn't. It's an original story. The cast is brilliant, both the teenage actors and the adult ones. Melanie Lynskey, I think, takes the... She is phenomenal as this kind of pissed off, generally pissed off woman who is in charge of, like, a teenage daughter. And she's kind of... She looks back on her life and you know, kind of... And her erotic experiences with a teenage boyfriend. And she's clearly dissatisfied now. There's Tawny Cypress, who is a really interesting character that she's looking to become... she's going to become... a politician. Juliette Lewis is in it. Amazing. Yes. I love Juliette Lewis. Doing
Ritchie is in it.
Yeah. Christina Ritchie. But Juliette Lewis doing absolute peak Juliette Lewis action in every way. Love her in everything she does. You know, she's so kind of offbeat and weird and all of that. So the cast is great. I think the setup is fascinating and interesting. And it is like, feels like cobbled together from lots of different things. Lord of the Flies, It, other Stephen King things. But it's really good. It's a really interesting story. I hope, I've only seen the first two episodes and they're really gripping and convincing, and the whole depiction of teenage life is very real, and the whole depiction of what they're like as adults is real. But I'm really hoping it doesn't go too supernatural, because that is going to do the thing that Stephen King adaptations often do for me. And when it gets all supernatural in like the last third, it loses it for me generally. So I'm wondering if they can just about cling on to it being all the horror that happens that's about to unfold, being it real rather than in quote supernatural. That's just my own taste, really. But I'm really enjoying it so far.
Yeah, yeah. I've only seen the first episode, but it had me from the opening scene, which is ruthless and terrifying. And then, yeah, manifests. So I don't know if this wraps up in the second episode, but it's three timelines, which is ambitious. It's the modern day survivors, which is where we've got Juliet Lewis, Christina Ricci, and Melanie Lynskey, who is just, it just about steals the show. And I really like everything about this show. It says how great she is. So it's them in the current day, and they're in this like support group together, which is a really interesting thing to look at them reliving their trauma, but not giving too much away about what's happened. And then it's just a few little sprinklings of the horror that is happening after the plane crash. And then before that is their lives as this kind of soccer team. And it's quite wholesome, but there's obviously a lot of tension simmering that you just know is going to manifest into the horror that you see post plane crash. And I mean, I'm always skeptical about multi timelines, trying to sort of mash them together. Sometimes the casting's a little bit off. Sometimes it's too much exposition. But here, I think it works so well. Like it's so, so good. I'm really interested in every character and who's going to go where. You know, is the little SWAT going to be the leader? Because as well, there's it alludes to cannibalism as well. I think things do not go well on the island after the plane crash. And so yeah, I was thrilled by this. I love Karen Kusama. I really like, there's this kind of second life now for film directors who have been done and dirty by Hollywood quite a lot of the time. Like, people have not been kind to Karen Kusama in her work. Jennifer's Body, one of the best horror films ever. So it's great to see her really sinking her teeth into this really vicious, taut horror show. And I love that it's an original as well, as you say, Boyd. Like, it has, you know, it has echoes of King, but it is its own thing in its own right. And it's terrifying. It's really well written. It's got the kind of the best bits of teen shows, the ruthlessness of young women pitted against each other. There's heart as well. There's kind of a queer undertones between Ella Purnell's character Jackie and young Melanie Lynskey's character Sophie. So there's that sort of simmering away at the same time, so there's like sexual frustration. Yeah, I loved it. I thought this was absolutely brilliant, and I'm really excited to see the rest of it. I think it's gonna stress me out, but that's not a reason for me not to watch it. I think it's great.
I like that this show very much wears its identity on its sleeve. Like, so it's teenage protagonist largely, because obviously there's two timelines, but it goes out of its way from the very first scene to make 100% sure you know this is not a teen show. This is not YA on any level. It is absolute pitch black. Like, yeah, it really is, and it doesn't mess about. It's kind of like what would happen if Lord of the Flies kind of collided head on with a Stephen King novel and Lost. Like, it has lots of the sort of these vibes together, whether it be the plane crash, the island, the timelines. Well, it's not even an island, it's a wilderness. But I love this a lot. I like that it's got it's our second Arcane crossover of the review section, yep, because Ella Purnell's in it. But yeah, it's really good, and I think it was a smart move to have heavyweights like Melanie Lynskey is fantastic, but to have like Juliette Lewis, to have Christina Ricci in the adult sections, because you run a very, very big risk of those being the least compelling parts of this show. So the three timelines, so before the crash, is really interesting because you're getting to know these girls who are just fucking awful to each other, and I think that's probably like before this crash they are all fucking each other over left and right. Like, it's just the most dreadful. And then so you establish that it's not that they're all they're lovely people, and then the breakdown of society, like they were pretty fucking feral when they were at school, and then they drop them in the wilderness, and then you see obviously it's like 19 months there, you see what happens, like the crash is in episode 2, it's a brutal crash and the aftermath of the crash, and then we see glimpses of what happens over those 19 months, like you see them like all wearing furs, and there's some hint of cannibalism, there's all sorts of shit going on, like it's really dark. And then there's another mystery conspiracy in the present day where they're trying to unfathom, like, you know, someone knows, who knows, what do they know, what are they hiding, what really happened, how is it going to impact their lives as adults, they're all traumatized by it. And Christina Ricci plays a brilliant sociopath named Misty. it's really watchable, and actually I found because of these kind of heavyweights in the sort of the latter time period, and because they actually make an effort to sort of bring the mystery, because I always found with Lost, like anytime you flashed off the island, with the exception of the Mr. Echo one, actually, anytime you flashed up the island, whether it was a flashback, a flash forward, a side flash, whatever you want to call them, I always found that the least compelling parts of that show. And I was like, you're taking me away from the stuff I care about, which is what's happening on the island. Whereas with this, I actually found, by the time I got into episode 2, I found those modern sort of time actually very compelling. And it was like, I like the island. I'd rather be on the island than anywhere else. But frankly, this stuff's really good too. So they strike that balance very well. So yeah, I think this is a surprise. It kind of came a little bit, if not out of nowhere, but it did kind of land in my viewing list unexpectedly. And yes, love it a lot. We'll watch all of these without a shadow of a doubt. Yellow Jackets drops on Sky Atlantic on the 2nd of December at 9 p.m. and will be on Now as well. Right, next this week, as we plow on into our four-part review section, is Chucky, or the continuing adventures of serial killer Charles Lee Ray in the body of that infamous good guy doll. Beth, tell us about Chucky.
Okay. again, so what little I know about Marvel, I know even less about the Chucky franchise. so bear with me. But yes, this is from Don Mancini again. This is a serialized take on Chucky that explores more of what he wanted to explore more in the films, but didn't really have the freedom to do that. So this centers on a high schooler called Jake, played by Zachary Arthur, and he picks up Chucky at a yard sale because he's obsessed with retro and not vintage items. Reason to hate him from the off, but bear with us. and Jake is gay, but as closeted as he can be, he's more afraid to tell people he's got an alcoholic dad. He's not the kindest, and he lost his mum when he was younger. that he's developing a crush on someone at high school. But there's a lot of enemies. He's got this really nasty kind of high school corridor queen, and a bunch of people just trying to make his life hell for reasons that aren't especially clear, other than they're just fucking awful. And that's when Chucky comes to life and kind of invokes his own reign of terror on the people that aren't doing his owner very much good. So that's kind of the premise of it. It's lending a lot from Riverdale, I think. Here there's a very kind of modern, breathy soundtrack of Lord Wannabes, or maybe Lord. I haven't listened to a lot of Lord, to be honest, but there's lots of very like slow, moody sequences, fair bit of violence. I don't know. I wanted this to push further on the queer themes. I've only seen the first two episodes, but it feels like it wants to do more, wants to be more violent. But it just feels like it's kind of sat on its laurels a little bit and not really going to the lengths that it wants to. It felt a little bit numb to me.
Oh, I liked it more. I guess I thought it was really kind of, you know, I guess kind of amazing to have a 14-year-old gay protagonist, really. Yeah. You know, and I thought it worked really well. I thought he was great. Zachary Arthur's great as the character, as Jake. And I thought it was like, I think it's like, it feels like he, the creator, Don Mancini, is like slightly torn between wanting to do the teen drama. Probably he's been wanting to do his whole life, maybe, you know, it's like, you know, a Dawson's Creek / whatever, but with a gay, young gay teenage protagonist. And also have the fucking Chucky thing going on at the same time. So it's like, on the one hand, I've got to do this horror stuff, you know, and on the other hand, actually, my heart is in this story of this young guy dealing with his sexuality and the bullying, and his dad, his horrendous father, who genuinely kind of, I thought, was scarier than Chucky, put it that way, because he's real and he's abusive to his son. And his son, I thought one of the little things that I thought worked really well was the artist, the creations that he makes of these dolls, that he makes these like quite elaborate, rather good, I thought, artwork, sculptures, if you like, made out of dolls that he's found in different stores. So that's the kind of, I thought that was really clever. And I like, and then when, well, I won't spoil it, but when something happens, I was gutted. I was really emotional. I was kind of, you know, emotional about that, what happens between him and his dad in that first episode. I thought it was really effective. So that stuff I kind of liked. I could have done without, I mean, I've seen some Chucky films and they are entertainingly shit. I mean, they are, you know, in, to various degrees, but there's nothing scary about Chucky. Do you know what I mean? Chucky is a funny kind of comedy horror creation to me. I just cannot get, you know, scared by this thing. But they do use him quite amusingly in this series. But do you know what? I could have just actually done without that whole side of it, and just could. And I'm fascinated by a story of, you know, a story of a 14-year-old gay guy dealing with what he has to deal with in an American high school and an abusive father and all of that, and moving, then having to move, you know, and you know, seeing what happens with his extended family, etc. So I did like it. I think I liked him. I thought it was pretty effective what it was trying to do.
I think the first Child's Play film is perhaps less comedic. Like, it gets progressively stupider as it goes along.
And certainly
the extended Chucky verse, you get Bride of Chucky, Cult of Chucky, it's just mental. Like, it's just off the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Whereas this, I think this strikes an interesting tone. I actually didn't want to watch this in the slightest, but actually I quite liked it. I think it manages to strike that tone between the ridiculous and the poignant, and like, as you say, it has an emotional punch in the relationship between him and his father, and Chucky also. It's not just mindless slashing. Like, obviously it's Brad Dourif back doing the voice of Chucky, and I like the fact that it's not just like, there's a part where he sticks up for, you know, the boy by mouthing off to someone who's bullying him, like, and it's just like, it's not necessarily murderizing them, although I'm sure that will come. But I liked the relationship between them. I liked it was interesting. And you do have those sort of the sinister moments. Again, it's the beats we've seen before, like when he opens up the battery compartment and there are no batteries in there, but it's been talking. What's going on? Look, it's not high art or anything. let's not pretend this is going to be dominating the Emmys or anything. But it's you know, it's fine. And actually, I think if people have enjoyed the Child's Play films, if they're actually into that, if they like them, then they'll love this series. I do wonder whether there's a lot here for people who are not already, you know, part of the Chucky faithful. But you know, I think, who knows?
I think people will find it interesting. I think it's not every day that you get a teenage, I have to say, teenage gay protagonist of this kind
of
show.
That is true.
It's true. It's interesting.
Less that you have a teenage gay protagonist with a homicidal living doll.
Right. Who is on his side, right? You make a good point, actually, that is an interesting, there's interesting morality going on, you know, because you're right. Chucky's kind of defending the young gay guy who's being bullied. Both by his father and at school. So that is a very interesting. Now I come to think of it, actually, because I was slightly dismissive of the Chucky element. But now I come to think of it, that is quite a clever little way of deploying Chucky. Oh,
we're watching a live reverse ferret.
Well done, Chucky. But I mean, this is generally way better than it needed to be, though, isn't it?
I think that's absolutely true. It could have skated by on being a far lesser show, so it's a lot better than certainly I thought it would be. But Chucky arrives on Sky Max on the 3rd of December at 9 p.m. and also on Now. Finally, this week, we have You Don't Know Me, based on the novel by Imran Mahmood and adapted by Vigil's Tom Edge. And this one sees Angela Black's Samuel Adewunmi as hero. And he's a man charged with murder who stands up, let's be honest, quite unconventionally. I should point out, Imran Mahmood is a defense barrister. I'm not sure this would wash in court, I've got to be honest with you. Where a guy fires his lawyer, decides to give his own closing statement, and launches on a mini-series length monologue outlining his entire case. But sure, let's just go with that, because he stands up in court to give his side of the argument. Boydy, what do you know about You Don't Know Me?
Well, I am a legal expert, so I will say that I think you're right. Yeah, there's a funny bit roughly halfway through episode one where Samuel Adewunmi as hero has launched his monologue, in which he is explaining what really happened to him, having dismissed his defense lawyer. And suddenly the judge pipes up and goes, "You do realize you're not supposed to bring in new evidence in the closing statements at trials," because he's literally explaining his whole fucking life story to the jury and the judge at this point. And he's definitely bringing in new evidence and new stories and narratives. But I love the idea of this. I think, I mean, I haven't read the novel, but from the sound of it, the novel is a novel length entirely based on his closing statement at trial, the main character's closing statement at trial, who explains what went on from his point of view. In the same way, this four-part, four-hour drama series is entirely effectively being told in flashback, if you like, by this guy in his closing statement and having back. So it's a cunning. You're right. It's an unrealistic and yet cunning device, because you admire the pluck of everyone involved in trying to pull this thing off. And I think key to it is Samuel Adewunmi himself, who I think is great. And he was really good in Angela Black that just finished recently, a few weeks ago on ITV, that I really enjoyed. And I think he pulls it off. I think he's great. And Bucky Backray is in it, who is absolutely phenomenal in Rocks. She's brilliant. So the cast helps a lot to persuade us. And in fact, Tom Edge is writing as well. I think Tom Edge is very good at this stuff in pacing out a thriller narrative and keeping surprises and, you know, reveals, etc. from you. So I really enjoyed it. I'm sounding very boring, because it's a 4 for 4 this week for me. I enjoyed all these shows. It's a bit, I'm known for being quite positive, but I'm fascinated to know where this goes, because by the end of the first episode you're like, I think I've established what happened then, because he kind of explains roughly about what happened to this crime that he's been accused of, and looks like an open and shut case. And then by the end of the first episode you're like, oh, so it's not, he's totally explained what happens, but then there's 3 more hours of this to go, and I'm fascinated to know where it goes. So I'm fully hooked, I have to say.
I thought this was fantastic. I did not know what to expect from this, but he's really, and it does hinge on his performance. Like, he's incredibly charismatic, very likable, but he's a very compelling storyteller, which fundamentally you really need him to be in this, because he's recounting this whole thing. He's narrating it all and he's going through it. And you're seeing it through his eyes, from hero meets Kyra, his girlfriend, she goes missing, but obviously, and so it's all layering out, because I don't think at the end of the first episode it's tied up. I think it's only just beginning. Like, you know, he's get to the point like you think I killed this guy, but I didn't. And this is the story of why. And I think we're starting to unpack what I suspect will be a very, very implausible story. Seems a bit far-fetched, but I am absolutely gripped by it. I think his performance is great. I think Sophie Wilde, who plays Kyra, is fantastic in it as well. This was a real surprise for me, and it's been a good few weeks, I would say, for British courtroom wiggy dramas with lots of barristers like rolling around, having sort of come straight off show trial and now sort of straight into this. I'm really getting into this because we don't get a lot of like British courtroom stuff. Certainly nowhere near enough. Like given the amount of American courtroom stuff there is, and British courtroom stuff has its own special charm. And yes, not all that much of this takes place in the courtroom. It mainly takes place in the flashbacks. But it's really good. It is really good. So yes, loving this as well. And You Don't Know Me starts on Sunday the 5th of December at 9 p.m. on BBC One, and makes for a four pack of, well, a three pack of really good shows, and also Chucky, which was good. But what else is out this week that we have not covered, Boydie? Lost in Space returns on the 1st of December for its third season, a show that I thought Netflix had forgotten about after the first season, but came back for a second season, and now it's coming back for a third season.
Third and final,
that returns. The Hot Zone Anthrax, that's the Hot Zone that obviously we reviewed the first season of. Season 2 is the Hot Zone Anthrax, so it's obviously an anthology, so it's a different story, but that comes to National Geographic. I don't know if that's where the first one aired, but anyway, the second series airs on National Geographic, then comes on the 1st of December. Alex Rider returns for season 2. That's now on IMDb TV. That was Amazon last time, wasn't it, Boyd?
It was, but you can only get IMDb TV via Amazon. So it's a slightly weird. They're just kind of rebrand.
Because they're owned by Amazon anyway, aren't they? So Alex Rider is now on IMDb TV via Amazon. Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous Season 4 lands on Netflix on the 3rd of December. Superman and Lois Season 1 drops on the BBC on the 4th of December. Have you seen that, Boyd?
No, I haven't, no. But yeah, you're right.
That's the latest Arrowverse show.
Saturday tea time slot. Yeah, weird.
And
it's going to be on iPlayer. I think it's all on iPlayer as well. Yeah, you haven't mentioned that, you know, the big one. Come on. La Casa de Papel. La Casa de Papel. Yes.
Final season.
Part 5B, the final episodes of Money Heist, aka La Casa de Papel, arrive on the 3rd of December. Very excited about that. Harlem, do you know about that? It's kind of like, it's about four women in Harlem. It's a comedy. It starts on Amazon Prime on the 3rd as well. It's supposed to be quite good. Lots of stuff.
That is, broadly speaking, it. Now, here's the big question. What is your pick of the week?
I'm going to say, and I did love Hawkeye, but I'm going to say Yellow Jackets. I love this show.
Yeah, I agree. Yellow Jackets, yeah.
Also for me would be Yellow Jackets, but I'm going to say Arcane as well. Yellow Jackets and Arcane. I'm going to get
what
that in there.
What is happening? I know.
I'm chucking an animation in. Gone. Fantastic. Well, that is it, finally, for this week's show. Do bring us all your 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. And like Henry Cavill, feel free to interact with me and indeed Boyd and Beth at James C. Dyer, at Boyd Hilton, and at Beth K. Webb on Instagram. Next week, as we draw ever closer to Christmas, there is a veritable bounty of things arriving on our screens. We've got Landscapers on Sky, which we might just have special guests Olivia Colman and David Thewlis on the show to talk about that one next week. There's also Sex and the City series Just Like That, which we almost certainly won't see in time. Boyd, am I right in saying that?
No screeners.
Okay, brilliant. That'll be on, but we won't see it. But that doesn't matter, Boyd. It doesn't matter at all. Do you want to know why it doesn't matter? Because
why
even that
it?
Pales.
Let me think. Hold on. Wait a minute. First of all, it's my birthday next week.
It's Boyd's birthday.
Yeah. And I think the day after my birthday.
Yes, Boyd. Boyd.
Is it? Can it be the final season of?
It can.
Can it be?
It can.
The Expanse.
It is.
Yes.
The event of the week, nay, the year, the sixth and final season of The Expanse. I cannot wait for Beth to watch this one, having no fucking clue what is going on. This is going to be brilliant. It lands on Amazon on the 10th, and I cannot wait. Beltaloda! Pilot out.